Classic Tom Waits there, Blind Love from probably his most famous album, Rain Dogs. Before that, Sleater-Kinney, Wilderness off of the Woods album. Just an awesome hard rocking album. And Bobby Womack, just a little bit salty right before that. Thanks for listening tonight to An Experiment with Time. Enjoy the rest of your evening, folks. Reminder to catch the full playlist on wrct.org. You can hear this show every Saturday night at midnight. Enjoy the rest of your evening. We'll be right back.
Ruth Westheimer. And if you listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, you know that in most cases, size does not matter.
I was born to fly and spread these wings and find my own. I am coming home. Today will be the day it all will change. Nothing, no one's in my way. Today will be the day. Made to dream that anything can be my own. I found my home. Today will be the day it all will change. No one's in my way. Today will be the day.
Hi, this is Kenny.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Thank you. been seeing you after so long, girl. And with the way you look, I understand that you were not impressed. But I heard you let that little friend of mine take off your party dress. I'm not gonna get too sentimental like those other sticker valentines, 'cause I don't know if you are loving somebody. I only know it isn't mine. World is killing you, oh Allison. My aim is true. Well, I see you got a husband now. Did you leave your pretty fingers lying in the wedding cake? You used to hold him right in your hand. I bet it took all he could take. Sometimes I wish that I could stop you from talking when I hear the silly things that you say. I think somebody better put out the big light, 'cause I can't stand to see you this way. Allison, I know this world is killing you. Oh, Allison, my aim is true. My aim is true. My aim is true.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
I'm trying to tell you. I'll tell you what you've got to lose.
Yeah. WRCT Pittsburgh. Real vinyl.
What if the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at getscreened.org.
Hi, I'm Brad Keselowski, driver number 2, Discount Tire Ford Mustang. If there's one thing I've learned after years on the track, it's that having the right amount of pressure in your tires can make or break performance. Properly inflated tires are essential to the health of your car and to keep you driving safely. Check your tire pressure once a month, especially before road trips, or stop by your neighborhood tire retailer for help.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Hi, this is God. Whenever I'm in Pittsburgh, which is always because I'm omnipresent, I listen to every radio station at the same time, including WRCT.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we talk with writer Michelle Mushabek about the 75th anniversary of Al-Nakba.
Michelle tells our listeners about the ongoing atrocities in the occupied Palestinian territory that we really don't hear much about in the corporate media.
We talk about a military training program right in our own backyard. It's called the Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps, or JROTC, and it teaches lessons to more than 500,000 students in approximately 3,400 high schools nationwide. Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
And I am attorney Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and regular columnist for truthout.org. On May 15th, Palestinians marked the 75th anniversary of al-Nakba, which means the catastrophe in Arabic. On that date in 1948, Israelis ethnically cleansed nearly 750,000 Palestinians from their lands and destroyed more than 500 Palestinian towns and villages. In addition, on May 15th, for the first time ever, the United Nations General Assembly officially condemned the Nakba. May 15th was also the day that Israel and Palestinian Islamic Jihad agreed to a ceasefire brokered by Egypt to stop the violence that resulted in the deaths of 33 Palestinians and 2 Israelis. The Israeli assault on Gaza was the 6th such attack since 2007, when Israel imposed a permanent siege on Gaza, controlling the ingress and egress of Palestinians. Israel maintains an illegal occupation of Palestinian territory, and the United States enables this occupation by providing $3.8 billion in military aid to Israel every year. We are fortunate to have with us today Michelle Mushabek, who is a Palestinian-American writer, editor, translator, and musician. He is the founder and publisher of Interlink Publishing, a 36-year-old Massachusetts-based independent publishing house. Michelle wrote the article titled, "The Nakba Didn't End in 1948. It Continues to Impact Palestinians Daily," which was recently published by Truthout. Michelle Mushabek, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Oh, thank you, Heidi, and thank you, Marjorie, for having me on the show. It's good to be with you.
Michelle, please explain to our listeners why Palestinians continue to commemorate the Nakba. What are the conditions in the occupied Palestinian territory?
Well, let me start by saying that if someone in a pub asked me to describe my family's story in one sentence, I would say exile and starting over, exile and starting over, and exile and starting over. I would probably add a clarification that I did not repeat those words three times because I had too many beers. But my family's experience of multiple exiles from Katamon in West Jerusalem in 1948 to East Jerusalem to Beirut to New York, it is not unique, but it's one of the many sad episodes of being Palestinians. I always tell my children that our stories of exile and displacement and injustice will live on, as will our beautiful memories of our homeland. When it comes to the Nakba on May 15, 1948, the world really witnessed one of the largest forced migrations in modern history. This date is forever etched in the collective memory of every Palestinian. And yes, the Nakba did not end in 1948. It continues to this day because of the continuation of Israel's founding strategy of the forcible removal of the indigenous population. Because the horrific conditions Palestinians have to endure on a daily basis under Israel's brutal military occupation continue. Because the denial of Palestinian rights to equality, freedom, and dignity also continues. My family and friends in Palestine continue to suffer daily abuses under Israel's most inhumane form of collective punishment. But, you know, worst of all, in my view, is that our government remains tacitly supportive of Israel's human rights violations, its crimes against humanity, and its ongoing oppression of Palestinians. You asked about the conditions in the occupied territories. I can tell you that the level of Palestinian despair is really at an all-time high. Palestinians continue to be colonized. Their lands continue to be confiscated for illegal settlement building. Family members continue to be separated from one another by the so-called monstrosity called the separation wall. Communities continue to be forcibly displaced, homes demolished, Palestinian farmers' olive trees, continue to be uprooted. Palestinian children continue to be terrorized and killed by Israeli defense forces. And I can go on and on. You know, even Palestinians living inside Israel and are supposed to be Israeli citizens continue to be discriminated against. And all this takes place under the watchful eye of Israel's greatest ally, the United States. So to sum up, I just want to say that Palestinians are fighting, what they're fighting for is a just and democratic society that benefits everyone. So until Palestinians get justice, freedom, and equal rights, and until Israel adheres to international law, there can be no hope for peace. And by the way, we're not going away.
Michelle, you write that Israel maintains an apartheid regime. Can you please elaborate?
Yes, sure. Apartheid is racism at its core. It's a harsh, institutionalized system of racial segregation with policies that privilege one people over another. And in Israel, non-Jews do not have the same political and economic rights as Jews. Israel controls the area between the Jordan River and to the Mediterranean Sea, and yet half the people living under Israeli control are denied equal rights. They have no say in how they want to be governed. And international human rights organizations, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, have issued extensive reports recently that concluded that Israel practices apartheid. Even B'Tselem, Israel's oldest human rights organization, recently said that Israel is not a democracy that has a temporary occupation attached to it. It is one regime between the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, and we must look at the full picture and see it for what it is, apartheid. And also the International Criminal Court labeled apartheid as a crime against humanity. Yet our elected officials, of course, disregard all of this.
Michelle, Israel justifies its repeated assaults on Gaza by claiming that it is acting in self-defense. Why is that an impermissible characterization?
Yes, we hear that all the time. You know, Israel does not really exercise its so-called right to self-defense when it bombs Gaza repeatedly, as some of our elected officials and the mainstream media outlets would have you believe. Israel commits mass murder and war crimes when it does that. It utilizes its military might, one of the world's most powerful and dangerously equipped army, air force, and navy, against an occupied, crowded population under a suffocating siege for over 15 years. And we Palestinians, we wonder and we ask, why hasn't the U.S. shown us the same empathy, compassion, and support and resolve that it has shown our brothers and sisters in Ukraine during their struggle to end their illegal occupation of their land? I am really very troubled by the fact that many fellow progressives, even, who speak up against the Russian occupation of Ukraine and other injustices, continue the tradition of silence when it comes to Israel.
Under a General Assembly resolution, the occupied people have a right to resist an illegal occupation.
You are absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely.
Michelle, in your article, you quote your friend in Gaza who told you, quote, "What is worse than dying in Gaza is living in Gaza." What did he mean by that?
You know, the situation in Gaza is so heartbreaking. Gaza has been called the world's largest open-air prison, and there are nearly 2 million people in Gaza, mostly refugees from 1948 and 1967. And as you mentioned in your introduction, Gaza has been under siege for over 15 years. And during this period, Israel bombed Gaza 8 times, and each time causing death, destruction, and a human tragedy of unimaginable proportions. The people of Gaza live their lives in daily fear of the next round of aerial bombardment and missiles that could rain on them from the sky at any time and destroy their homes and rip their families apart. This is really a historic injustice and must be stopped. We cannot really remain silent about Israeli crimes that deny Palestinians the right to live as equal human beings with freedom and dignity. It's so upsetting. You know, each time Israel's indiscriminate and criminal bombardment, it ends with a short-lived ceasefire, but that, because the terror from the sky has temporarily stopped, it does not mean that the terror on the ground has ended. It is not a ceasefire when Israel continues to kill Palestinians by land, sea, and air. It's not a ceasefire when Gaza remains under siege and all crossings are closed. And it's not a ceasefire until the violence and ethnic cleansing are properly addressed and halted. The humanitarian conditions in Gaza are dire. There are shortages of food, electricity, fuel, medical supplies. All this is leaving Palestinians without life-sustaining goods and services and with endless misery and hardship. That is why my friend said to me that living in Gaza is worse than dying, because living is a slow and prolonged death. Every child in Gaza suffers from PTSD as a result.
Could you also please cite some recent atrocities that Israel committed in the occupied West Bank?
I mean, there's been systemic raids in the West Bank, on Jenin, on Nablus, and other towns that killed scores of civilians. Last year, the Israeli army shot and killed over 170 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank alone, many of whom were children, and they wounded hundreds. The most alarming thing is also settler violence against Palestinians is on the rise. According to Defense for Children International, Israeli forces and settlers killed 36 children last year across the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And I recently read a report by Amnesty International that today there are 175 permanent checkpoints and blockades supported by a biometric surveillance system in the West Bank. Israeli authorities also last year demolished 952 structures across the West Bank and had administratively detained 866 Palestinians. And it's pretty horrific.
Michelle, 1 year ago, beloved Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh was assassinated by the Israeli occupying forces for reporting on Israel's illegal activities in the West Bank. Has anyone been brought to justice for her killing? And was Abu Akleh's death an isolated incident? Or do other Palestinian journalists face similar repression from Israel?
Well, of course not. No one has ever been brought to justice when a member of the IDF has killed a Palestinian, journalist or otherwise. Palestinians the world over will never forget the assassination of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh 1 year ago. Her murder by the IDF with a sniper bullet to the face while clearly wearing a press vest is shocking. You know, Abu Akleh dedicated her life to reporting the truth and exposing the horrors of the ongoing Israeli occupation. And she, in my view, she represented the best of Palestine and the best humanity has ever produced. You asked about other Palestinian journalists. Israel's systematic targeting of Palestinian journalists, the arrest of human rights defenders, and the shutting down of human rights organizations have been very well documented. A couple of weeks ago, the Committee to Protect Journalists issued a new report released to coincide with the anniversary of Abu Akleh's death. And the report found that since 2001, Israel has never charged or held anyone accountable for the killings of at least 20 journalists, 18 of whom were Palestinian.
My co-host Heidi Boghossian and I, Marjorie Cohn, are speaking with writer and publisher Michelle Mushabek about the ongoing Nakba in Palestine. Michelle, please tell our listeners about the recent attacks on Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the occupied Palestinian territory. Have other UN Special Rapporteurs been subjected to analogous attacks for their criticism of Israel?
The UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the occupied Palestinian territory, Francesca Albanese, has come under vicious attacks, including false accusations of anti-Semitism following her report highlighting Israeli settler colonialism and apartheid. But she is a strong person who does not succumb easily to intimidation or threats. And yes, she's not the only UN special rapporteur on human rights to be subjected to attacks. I don't think I am wrong in saying that most former UN special rapporteurs have received some kind of harsh treatment. Former UN special rapporteur and friend Richard Falk, for example, a prominent international lawyer and professor at Princeton University, was even barred by the Israeli government from entering Israel when he was UN special rapporteur.
It's clear that Israel now has the most right-wing anti-Palestinian government in history. You write that many people in Israel's new regime favor a, quote, out-of-state solution. What is that?
You know, the two-state solution promised to Palestinians during the Oslo Accords is no longer possible. It is dead completely because of Israel's continuous colonization and de facto annexation of Palestinian land. The chances of a one-state solution with equal citizenship rights for everyone are even slimmer, since Zionists insist on keeping Israel a Jewish state with democratic rights for Jews only. So what is left, and what many in the new extremist Israeli government are in favor of, is what I'm calling the out-of-state solution. And what I mean by that is that this is a strategy that aims to transfer Palestinians or keep oppressing them until they give up and leave to neighboring Arab countries, dispossessing them of their homeland. But Palestinians are determined to keep their struggle alive. So this too, I believe, will fail.
Michelle, in 2005, Palestinian civil society issued a call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And people around the world have responded, so much so that Israel considers the BDS movement an existential threat. Could you please tell our listeners what the BDS movement entails?
Sure. Inspired by the South African anti-apartheid movement, the BDS movement is a nonviolent global initiative that works to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians and pressure Israel to comply with international law. BDS advocates for boycotting Israeli and international companies engaged in violations of Palestinian human rights. It also calls for the divestment and has initiated many campaigns that urge banks, churches, universities, and the like to withdraw investments from the State of Israel and companies that sustain Israeli apartheid. And BDS also aims to pressure governments to fulfill their legal obligation to end Israeli apartheid by imposing sanctions. I can add that while it's hard for Palestinians to not feel helpless when they are subjected to these massive injustices for so long, they have shown tremendous resilience and are inspired by the collective support of people in the global community, and especially the many, many gains achieved by the growing boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement known as BDS.
Although the U.S. government continues to unconditionally support Israel's illegal policies, there has been some recent pushback in the U.S. Congress. Can you please explain?
Sure. You're correct in saying that this administration, like those before it, continues to shield Israel from accountability for its violations of international law and enables its settler colonialism and apartheid by providing it with billions of dollars in military funding. Congress's really deafening silence and its fear of criticizing the Israeli government makes it complicit in the ongoing suffering of Palestinians. Congress has become Israel's top enabler of its crimes of apartheid and the main stepping stone in the Palestinians' quest for freedom equality, and human rights. But having said this, you are also correct in saying that the discourse is changing. Our activism is working, and our representatives are beginning to listen. The recent Gallup poll concluded that now the Democrats' sympathies lie more with the Palestinians than the Israelis, 49% versus 38%. And the magnitude of global solidarity with the Palestinians shows that people, especially the younger generation, are no longer looking away. But while the discourse has changed enormously on the public level, the change has not yet been matched on the part of our elected officials. But we are definitely seeing signs of some pushback. And I can give you a few examples. Recently, Representative Betty McCollum and 16 co-sponsors have introduced a bill prohibiting Israel from using U.S. aid to detain Palestinian children, destroy Palestinian homes, or unilaterally annex Palestinian land. And this is an important bill that was introduced before, but Betty McCollum continues to reintroduce it again and again. Another example would be on May 15th, the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, Kevin McCarthy blocked Representative Rashida Tlaib from hosting an event at Capitol commemorating the Nakba. But despite McCarthy's attempt, the event went ahead anyway. It was moved to a Senate office room thanks to Senator Bernie Sanders, who was able to secure a new venue in the Senate office building where McCarthy has no jurisdiction.
Michelle, what can our listeners do to pressure the U.S. government to stop enabling the illegal Israeli occupation?
I would say don't stop the protests and don't stop putting...
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Over the years, you've brought opioids into your home. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But holding on to opioids puts your family at risk. Learn more at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You are listening to an encore presentation of the Viva La Mock radio program right here on WRCT Pittsburgh. My name is Paul. I am the Mockster. This show originally aired on WRCT on Friday, January 20th, 2023. So let's not waste any time.
Let's get back into more music. I've been trying to say that for a while. From his Village album, came out last year, it's Billy Crane.